EA has made 23 more accessibility patents free for any studio to use. Plus, the creator of Dragon Quest wants kids to play the recent HD2D remake when you're done with it. Tonight is December 8th, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
It's been a week for me, but I'm here. How are you? This is, I'll tell you in a second why it's been a week. But hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another edition, a solo edition, an only edition. I am the only one here tonight here for Fog Network edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us here live on this, it's not as chilly tonight here where I'm at, but on this nice December evening, welcome. We do try to tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. But this is a podcast. I do understand that. So if you want to join our Discord server during the week, you can talk back about previous things, as well as suggest stories that you might want us to cover. One of the stories here came from our Discord. Join our Discord server. It's very low traffic. We don't ping you or anything like that. VogNetwork.com/Discord gets you the invite into there, and you can come join us through that. So this has been a fun and harrowing week and weekend for me. Some people eagle-eyed that may know in my messy office, because I don't like keep a pristine streaming environment because I live here and I work here. This is where I work all week. You can see like this big Xbox One behind me, and it's actually the cooler. It's not the mini fridge. They did not make an Xbox One mini fridge, but they've got like this cooler, and it's up here in my office. It's usually down in the basement, and that's because home renovations happen at the worst times, it seems. So we've been needing to we've been working on renovating our kitchen for the past couple of years, and things took a turn in my life with having to deal with estates and things like that. And we paused almost at the end of our kitchen renovation, which was the painting. And so we still needed to paint all the cabinets and get the cabinets in our kitchen painted and the walls painted and stuff done in our dining room, right? And it's been hard to get quotes from painters. I've been trying for a couple months. Finally got one a couple weeks ago. And then they called and they're like, all right. They called and we talked this past Tuesday, and they're like, yeah, so we can start next Monday. So that means tomorrow. So we have spent the last 5 days moving out of our kitchen and dining room, moving everything out of every cabinet, moving everything off of every wall, everything kind of that we had all around. And that include, and also for the next 6 days, because that's how long it's going to take, because it's a whole bunch of like old wood cabinets that are not easy to paint. So it's like a 5 to 6 day job. We won't have access to our kitchen. So I'm going to be having drinks in, you know, stored in the cooler over here during the day for me to get. So I already have that up here. And as Jared and Matt says, sounds like someone who wants it to get done before the holidays. So here's the thing. We don't need it for the holidays. It's just, we kind of expected, because of all the other painting projects we've had done in the house, basically in our basement, there's always been like a 2 to 3 month lead time. They're like, yeah, we can get you on the list and maybe get to you in like 3 months. And that's what we expected. When they were like, yeah, next week, we were like, wait a minute, what? So, we're getting it all that. And Breakman says, Bobby, I think you could have gotten away with taking tonight's show off. But you see, here's the thing. We're done. We've moved out of the kitchen. It's all done. So so I can be here, and I'm going to be here next week. And And then the contractors are going to come in, do all the work, and I'm just going to sit up here and, you know, do my own work and, you know, pull drinks out of there. So I'm actually using the Xbox One cooler, which they don't call it a mini fridge. They actually do. They call it, okay, hang on. So, because I have the little instruction manual, they actually call it a replica mini fridge thermoelectric cooler. So they actually call it a mini fridge, but it's not a mini fridge. And then also in this document that comes with the thing, it says like on every page, it should not be plugged in for longer than 48 hours. So all it does is it keeps things like 20 degrees colder, 20 degrees Fahrenheit colder than room temperature. And it even suggests you need to already have them cold when you put them in. It does not chill things that are already warm. We should have access to our fridge at night. So before everybody comes in, we will go in and take things out of our fridge that's in the kitchen. And then I will put them in there for the day. And so it will only be on for like 8 to 10 hours, which they're okay with. But yeah, Breakman says this theme seems lame. Yeah, once I learned it wasn't an actual mini fridge and it was just a cooler, it wasn't as cool. Get it? But it's going to work for what we need it. And it's also kind of nice out when it's in the basement, I can like take another drink down with me and I put it in the cooler. And that way I don't have to go all the way back up to the kitchen because I'm lazy when I'm down like playing in the arcade or playing in our home theater or all those, any of that other first world problem stuff. So, Breakman says an overpriced cooler. Yes, it probably is. We probably paid a little bit too much for it, but that's fine. We saw it at Target and got it and, yeah, I have it now, and so we're going to use it. And S. Jonah Matt says, got to cool all the Pepsi products, right? Can somebody ban S. Jonah Matt? Just kidding. Just kidding. Or am I? So, did I play that many games this week? No. Did I watch any sports this week? Of course. So, you know, go Dogs and all that fun stuff. Tiger Claw says it uses the Peltier chips, talking about the Xbox mini fridge, and I'm using quotey fingers on the mini fridge. They don't cool as much as a real fridge, but cool enough to keep your currently cold drinks to stay cold. And yes, that's exactly what it's for, and that's how we're going to use it, and it's going to be great. And then next week, we'll have a newly painted kitchen and dining room that we won't be able to use yet because we need the paint to cure. And then the following week, I won't be around on Christmas week. So for programming note, I'm here this week. I am here next week. I will not be here the following week, which is December 22nd. And Orange Lounge Radio, not going to be on tonight. Unfortunately, two of the three members are very sick right now. So the last thing they should be doing is talking on the internet. So they're not going to tonight. And then next week, they were already planned to be off because of a trip. So I'm going to be alone this week and next week, and then they're going to be alone on the 22nd when they come by. So that's how things are going to be here at Vogue Network. And now I want to stop talking about podcasting and start talking about video games because talking about podcasting is boring. Anyway, so one of the things that we do is we do take comments from chat from our Discord throughout the week. They react to old episodes, and we were talking about Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024. And a couple episodes ago, I was talking about how the map data wasn't current. They're using all this Azure streaming technology, and I'm flying around, and I'm seeing map data from 2015, 2016 for my area. And I know this because I know what's been built since 2015 and 2016, and it's pretty glaring where it is. And 13X Forever does mention that it's using the Bing map data, because we were like, I think that's coming from Bing. Same thing that they have on the web and Windows Maps app, but they layer on it generated buildings, trees, and traffic system they developed for the game specifically. And that is true. They do. And I think that second part of the sentence is why things are off on it, because I go to Bing on the web, and it looks like the satellite imagery for the area that I'm talking about is from 2021 or 2022. It is way more recent on the web and on their app. And I think the reason for that is because they haven't gone back through and layered on the generated buildings and the trees and the traffic and all that stuff. They haven't done a second pass on it since Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020 came out. It's using the same data that they were using in 2020. So maybe, you know, it is very possible that they could fix this because it's running on the cloud. It's very possible they could do another pass, but I think they were more worried about getting Flight Simulator 2024 out, which apparently was not ready for prime time. I have not actually launched it since then, but I do know that there's a lot of people that are very upset at how Flight Simulator 2024 performs. People are staying in Flight Simulator 2020, which is still continuing to get some updates as well. But 2024 is not doing what it needs to do to convert the people from 2020 up to 2024 right now. Maybe in 6 months, 9 months, they'll be able to do it. But right now, it is not there. So thank you so much for the clarification on where it comes from. That's where I thought it came from. But it's good to have clarification on that. And I'm positive that this was the Bing Maps data from 2016 that they had in 2020. And they just haven't updated it to the 2021-2022 version that I see currently. Esther Nemat says, I flew over my hometown and over my high school, and it was missing an addition they added in recent years. So, yeah, it's updated in some parts and not in others. Yeah, it's probably, I want to say it's probably the same map they're using in 2020. I want to say it's this, whatever you see in Flight Simulator 2020 is what you're going to see in 2024. So, who knows? I think it was, there was a Flight Simulator, and I can't remember exactly which Flight Simulator it was, but it was a Steam sale. You could buy it for like 99 cents. Like, I want to say 10, 15 years ago. And I could tell that it's map data, because obviously it wasn't streamed from the cloud, but this old version of Flight Simulator was from 1996 when you flew over Atlanta, because it had all the Olympic venues from the Atlanta Olympics. And it was like Flight Simulator 2000 or something like that. So like 4 years later, it was still showing all the Olympic stuff. So that's where they had their data, which maybe, I guess, you know, it took them 4 years to get it made at the time, because they had to get it right the first time, because we didn't really patch much in 2000 yet. The patching stuff didn't happen for another 5 years or so. But I'm used to Flight Simulator having very old data. And I can't see my house from Flight Simulator because it says there's too many trees around. So I just see a whole bunch of trees where my house should be. And so I don't even get to go down and see what my house looks like, or, you know, how they're spying on my house. So the good news is the satellites can't see my house. So that's a win for me. As Jared Matt says, so you could fly over the Omni. Yes. Because like it was mainly the Olympic Stadium was in its Olympic configuration with the Atlanta 1996 logo, which was, they demolished in 1997, it changed to be a baseball stadium, and it was actually an Olympic stadium in Flight Simulator. So yes, the Omni was still there, which was our old basketball arena that they tore down and built a new one on top of it. So, Flight Simulator 2024, though, still apparently a mess. There's supposed to be a big patch coming next week, from what I understand, that's going to fix a lot of things, but I don't know if it's going to fix enough for the community just yet, because there's a lot of things that Flight Simulator 2024 doesn't do well that 2020 still does well. So people are still kind of holding out for a little bit longer. So let's talk about, this is kind of a win for right to repair. So when I talk about right to repair laws, right to repair is the right of you as a consumer to repair your own electronics. A lot of companies don't like this. They don't want you to have the right to repair. That's why, you know, get this, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, cell phones, you had a removable battery and you could put in a new battery. And so if your battery died, what you would actually do, or what, like, I remember what my father did especially, is he would have a battery charger with a battery on his desk. So when his cell phone battery died, he would just take out the battery, put in the other one, and charge the other one. And that way you never had to plug in your phone. You could plug in your phone and charge it that way, or you could plug in the battery elsewhere. And then they said, no. Now you need to, you know, you can't replace the battery. It's fully, you have to, you know, and you can't do it unless we do it. And even if you tried to do it yourself, they're like, oh, no, you didn't do this the right way. You've got to pair it with us. And since you didn't do it through us, you're trying to hack our device and we're going to turn you off. So that is that's right to repair. And a lot of some states have laws now that say, well, no, you have to allow the consumer to repair. You have to provide repair materials for consumers to do the repair. You can't force them to just go through you, or you have to allow independent shops to do that. And some companies are saying, okay, fine, we will do the good PR thing, and we will take allowing people to repair our devices without waiting for the laws in every state. Massachusetts is one of the U.S. states that has a right to repair law. And so people, I think, in Massachusetts, they can repair a lot more things than people in Georgia can, for instance. So The Verge reports that iFixit now sells genuine Xbox parts that you can use to repair your Xbox Series X or S and offers official guides to help with fixes. You can browse what's available on my iFixit's Microsoft Repair Hub. Elizabeth Chamberlain, iFixit's Director of Sustainability, says in a statement to The Verge, quote, "We're excited to be working with Microsoft to keep Xboxes running longer and out of the waste heap. We now offer official Microsoft parts and step-by-step repair guides for Xbox Series S and X, including both the all-digital and disk drive editions," unquote. iFixit's Microsoft Repair Hub also features iFixit's parts for repairing Microsoft Surface devices, which it started selling in 2023. They said, quote, "Since we launched our Surface parts collection with Microsoft last year, we've been helping our customers repair their own Microsoft laptops and tablets, and it's awesome to be able to offer Xbox owners the same opportunity," unquote. So Microsoft isn't the only gaming company that iFixit has partnered with. iFixit sells nearly every part of the Steam Deck. Gabe Newell's over here saying, look at me, look at what I do, and offers a bunch of repair guides for Valve's handheld PC, too. Microsoft itself offers first-party parts for the standard and Elite Series 2 Xbox controllers. iFixit also offers genuine repair parts for Google's Pixel phones and the Pixel tablet. The company had sold genuine parts from Samsung, but that partnership ended earlier this year. Tiger Claw says, "I remember back in the days I used to put in an extended battery and it let the phone last longer." Yes, you used to be able to do that with a lot of electronics that you owned, and you can't do that anymore, unfortunately. I'm sorry. They don't want you to do that. Now, if you need to replace the battery in something, good luck, because you're going to have to convince them that you didn't steal things. So this is good for Xbox because getting consoles break, especially as more complex they get, the more complex they are, the more points of failure there are. And being able to repair things yourself, repair, iFixit will also, I believe, has like locations around that will repair things for you as well. And having that where you don't have to just go to Microsoft to fix something is always a good thing, because then you're not dealing with, okay, I got to send the coffin, which is basically they will have you ship in a box and send it back. I've had to do this before in the past where they actually like ship you the box that you're supposed to put it in. Then you put your thing in the box, you send it to them. We called it the coffin, and it would already be prepaid and stuff, so you didn't have to pay for it. Then they would ship, you either your system fixed, or usually they would just ship you a different system about, a month later or so. Sometimes what they would do is, if you really didn't care about the data that was on there, which was like, so this is kind of for back in the older days, they would ship you a new system and then charge you for it if you didn't ship your broken one back. And that was how they got around it. As Jared Matt says, "I got my Samsung screen battery replaced a bit ago. Good luck with iPhones." And Questbuster says, "On one hand, it's cool that iFixit offers the parts. On the others, OMG, those prices, especially the motherboard." Well, I mean, there's a trade-off. Like, do you want to fix it yourself? Then you got to pay, and Microsoft wants their cut, and iFixit wants their cut. And, they're also doing a lot of work, like putting the guides together. So there is costs involved. It is not, iFixit's not just like sending it to you with nothing. They're doing a little bit of work on, you know, the guides and the videos on how to do what you need to do. Another good on them, because we will talk about when large corporations mess up a lot. We will talk about that a lot. And I also like to say when these large corporations actually do good things, which they do. I know that it's not, some people don't like to acknowledge the good things that they do, because if you start acknowledging, and this is the thing I've heard, if you start acknowledging the good things that some of these corporations do, then they will never try to get better. And I've actually had somebody tell me that. On a panel that I was on, actually, because I was like, let's talk about where they've done good. And they're like, no, because if you give them an inch, they will never try to get better. So you never tell them when they've done good, because it will never be good enough. I don't agree. So I'm actually going to talk about something that EA has done good. Now, I'm not saying that EA is a perfect company. I'm not saying that everything EA has ever done and ever will do is good. But this is one of those things that I actually really like that EA has done. And I want to call them out and say good job. The Video Games Chronicle reports that Electronic Arts has added a further 23 patents to its ongoing patent pledge. The pledge was initially launched in August of 2021, with EA offering to share 5 of its previously protected patents with improved accessibility for players. This has grown to 15 patents over the past few years, and now a further 23 have been added, bringing the total to 38 patents. According to EA, any other game developer can use these patents without having to pay any money or risk being sued. So, software patents suck, in general. Just in general, that's how it is. Because what software patents will do is that they will basically patent both an idea and an algorithm of how to accomplish that idea. They don't actually have to have implemented that algorithm, that company, but if they implemented just the idea and how they would do it, then they can go after anybody that actually goes in and implements it, even if they implemented it completely independently of reading that patent. And we've seen a lot of patent trolls over the years. One actually thought they patented the actual concept of podcasting, where the act of putting an audio file on a server and letting people download it, and it's a radio show, that was actually patented. And they actually went after some big-name podcasters, which got all the big-name lawyers in, and it got squashed down. But EA, in order to protect themselves, they will patent a lot of these algorithms. All the game companies do this, and they have for decades. Some of the patents have expired by now, finally. But there are a lot of things that you would be like, oh, that's common sense. No, it's patented, so nobody else does it. It's such common sense. Why didn't anybody else do it? Well, because they get sued. Because the idea is owned by someone else. And this is why software patents really suck, because tech industry moves so fast and there's so many people in it that even if you came up with something independently, you could be sued for a patent. But EA has said, we're not going to sue you if you implement any of these ideas. Please implement these ideas specifically about accessibility. So the newly added patents include the following technologies. Intelligent personalized speech recognition. So this is a, quote, speech recognition system that improves the accuracy and efficacy of speech recognition by using personal phoneme mappings for each user to better understand accent and proper pronunciation variations, such as those resulting from speech impediments, unquote. Generating expressive speech audio from text data. This is, quote, a system that generates expressive speech audio from text data and provides more control and personalization of the generated speech based on desired speaking style and speaker attributes, unquote. Generating speech in the voice of a player of a video game. This is, quote, a system that can generate speech in the voice of a player for their avatar based on minimal sample speech data as compared with existing techniques, unquote. Now, this sounds like a lot of some of the stuff you might hear, quote unquote, AI doing, but it's just an algorithm, and that's what we used to call AI was an algorithm. So it's kind of some of the same stuff in here. Now, realize they're not allowing their implementation of these things. They're only allowing people to, quote unquote, infringe on their patents without worrying about it. So they're like, please, you do this yourself, and we're not going to sue you. That's fine. They're not releasing, like, the source code to their implementation of any of these patents. They're just saying, This idea you can have, and don't worry about it. Voice aging using machine learning. Here we go. Now we're getting into some Gen AI stuff. Quote, a system that can age an original input voice to a desired target age without requiring additional voice samples. My mixer does that too, by the way. Emotion-based music style change using deep learning. More Gen AI stuff, right? Quote, a system that infers a player's emotion while playing a video game and tunes the background soundtrack of the game to best fit that emotion, unquote. I don't think they've actually implemented that one yet. That one's like, we're going to patent this idea and how we think we're going to do it. And then here we go. And then dynamically selecting speech functionality on client devices. Quote, a system that automatically detects and enables speech recognition technologies available on a gaming device, unquote. As well as the patents, EA has also released an Unreal Engine 5 plugin, which enables in-engine use of its photosensitivity analysis tech Iris, which it open-sourced last year. They say, quote, through our patent pledge, we're committing that every developer in the industry will be able to use our Accessibility Center technology patents royalty-free. Anyone can freely use these patents and implement our accessibility-centered IP in their own games to make them more inclusive. This pledge covers some of our most innovative technologies designed to break down barriers for players living with disabilities or medical issues. This includes those with vision, hearing, speaking, or cognitive issues, unquote. And as Sharon and Matt does say, gaming is better when everyone is able to play. Dark Tetsuya says, I mean, I know EA's been known for some scummy stuff. Every corporation is. But at least they sometimes do stuff like this. And Mike Def says, EA's been doing more rights than wrongs lately. Props for them on them for doing this. The Breakman says that this all sounds good to me. And when a company makes positive changes that help employees, why shouldn't they get the praise? So, yes. So there's this is good stuff. Now, some of it is using... It's using generative AI and machine learning and language models, all the stuff that's like currently, ooh, the boogeyman, which for many reasons is correct to call it the boogeyman. But this is kind of using it the way that it should be used. It's just not the way that's getting investors, which is why you don't hear about this type of stuff. Now, some of this stuff, I would warn that there is going to be a privacy violation. I was reading through this and I was like, generating speech in the voice of a player in a video game. So that technology is good when the privacy is respected, because that can set a dangerous precedent depending on how they use that data. Do they generate that on a cloud system, which means now your voice data is on a cloud? And then can anybody else generate that data? Or could it get out, or could they sell it to somebody where they can generate stuff with your voice? Now, there's some privacy things that they have to do to be able to get it to work in the game, and that's what you see in the terms of service. But they may have to make it so broad, or they may make it broad enough that they could also use it other things. So just because we can use it doesn't mean it's going to be something that every company is going to implement really well, because these patents are not saying you must protect the privacy of the user when you're using their voice data like this. That's not in the patent. That's up to the implementation. And they have released some of their implementations for things, but I don't think they've released the implementation for a lot of this. They basically just released the algorithm. They're like, here's the blueprint. You go build it. But it's still, and there's a couple other patents. They only listed six in this article, so I'm not going to read all 23 of them. But seeing that there's a lot of great strides in accessibility has been a good thing. And I've seen multiple companies do it really well. Naughty Dog's done a lot of great things with accessibility. I know that Forza has done some really interesting things in order to make their games more accessible, which is not just add an easy mode. That's the thing that some people don't seem to understand, is that, oh, accessibility just means easy mode. No, it doesn't really just mean easy mode. There are other ways that the game that you can do to make the game able to be played and enjoyed by people who are differently able than you. Yes, will it make the game easier if you turn them on? You, a person who is perfectly abled and has, you know, all full function of your hands and your eyes and your ears, would turning these accessibility things on make the game easier for you? Yeah, maybe. I would say that there's one that wouldn't. My favorite one recently is Forza. I think Forza Motorsport put this in, where the accessibility is you can slow down the game. So you can actually slow down the game, but it slows down all of the physics. But that way, you don't have to react as fast to a turn or something like that. But it literally slows everything down. So it's actually, for me, it's harder to play Forza at like 85% speed, just a little bit slower. It's actually a lot harder. So it doesn't necessarily make the game easier for everybody, but it does make it for some other people. And honestly, for there are some people that even if they have those accessibility on, the game is still extremely difficult. And just because it's not difficult for you doesn't mean it's not difficult for someone else. Now, the Breakman says something. Unfortunately, there is no money to be made in making things more accessible. So, yeah, it's probably all impossible to find an investor. And I guess it's more about the Gen AI. But in games, at least, there is money in making things more accessible, because if you make the game more accessible, more people will buy it. And if all you care about is the bottom line, you want the most amount of people buying your game as possible. And that if that means you've got to put in things to make sure that people who are legally blind can play your game, that means people who are legally blind will buy your game, whereas they wouldn't before if you hadn't done that. If for people who are hard of hearing, if your subtitles are terrible, they're too small, they don't have a correct background on the back, underneath, or anything like that, or you just don't include them, then people who are hard of hearing are not going to buy your game. So there's absolutely money being made making games accessible. Now, I think Breakman's comment was more about, you know, Gen AI and having AI do things that make things more accessible. No, right now that's not where the dollar signs are. They're like, you could replace all your creative people with AI, and then you don't have to pay those silly artists and writers. You can just tell the AI, and you know, look at that. That's great. HDI Andrew, who I know is with game developers and Georgia Game Developer Association, says it may make the game easier if you need the accessibility tools, but it almost never easier to play a game if you require the accessibility options. I mean, easier if you don't need them. So yeah, it's people who need the accessibility options. It doesn't necessarily make the game easier for them. And the thing that I have heard about the main argument against including accessibility options that I have heard, and it was told to me on social media once, so I'm not saying I've heard it twice, three times, four times, five times. I've heard it once, and it was, if the options are there, I'm afraid I will use it. In other words, the reason they don't want accessibility options or an easy mode is, then I am not strong enough, and the way I'm paraphrasing what they're saying is that they, as the player, are not strong enough to continue playing the game without turning down the difficulty. And they would rather the option not be there to force them to get through the game at the difficulty the developers intended. Because if the option exists to go down to a lower difficulty, they are afraid they will actually use it, because they are not strong enough to keep themselves away from it. And that is the one argument I've heard against accessibility, is if they put it in, I'm afraid I will use it. And also they believe that if it's there, then it diminishes their accomplishment, I guess. Like, I beat this game. Well, yeah, so did, you know, this person who used some of the accessibility options. Well, then obviously that makes your achievement less, I guess, because someone else was able to do it. Mike Def says, my dude, I barely have time to play games. I don't need my games to be a burden at this time in my life. That's why I play games on story mode or easy mode. I fully admit I play games on story mode and easy mode because I don't have the time to repeat things over and over and over and over and over again until I get them right. I don't have the time, unfortunately, to learn the patterns of an Elden Ring boss, because I know it's all pattern recognition and all that stuff. I don't have the time to go and fail 50 times to figure out the pattern to defeat the boss. I've got better things to do with my time, like playing other games on easy mode and story mode. But I am also okay with games like Elden Ring and Dark Souls existing that are not accessible to me because of that time requirement. I'm totally fine with that. Not every game has to be for everybody. Questbuff says, do I need to use the options? No, but I'm happy they're there for someone that may need them. My enjoyment should not rule out someone else from having fun. Dark Tatsuya says, I'm playing Dragon Quest III HD on easy. You actually don't die and have to go through the process to revive your party members, which also includes a significant gold investment. And that ties in to our next story, believe it or not. This was interesting. I really liked this. Because it also kind of ties into, you know, games. It really depends on when you grew up playing games as to what, how you play games today. And it's, we've started seeing this with younger generation here, in terms of how well they can pick up other game concepts, that to many people that watch this show that are maybe of the older generation are like, of course this is how it worked. Like, of course, like, this is all innate. Like, everybody knows how to do this. No, it turns out no. Well, Video Games Chronicle reports that the creator of Dragon Quest has asked players who've completed the recent Dragon Quest III HD 2D remake to lend their copy to a child or newcomer. Which is great, because we do a lot of digital games and you can't actually lend the copy. But if you have the physical version, lend it to a child or a newcomer. The official Dragon Quest account on X posted an announcement that the remake had sold 2 million copies since its release 3 weeks ago. It says, quote, the HD 2D version of Dragon Quest III has exceeded 2 million copies shipped and downloaded worldwide. Thank you to all the brave warriors who adventured with us, and to all the brave warriors who are about to embark on an adventure. Have a good journey, unquote. Now, quoting this message, Dragon Quest creator Yuji Horii urged players with a copy of the game to pass it on to others to help introduce them to the series and the RPG genre. Horii tweeted, quote, it seems there are many that so many people are playing it, and I couldn't be happier. The game is much easier to play, so if you've already completed it, please lend the software to people who have never played Dragon Quest before or to small children and teach them how to play, unquote. Horii's request will doubtless be appreciated by Final Fantasy producer Naoki Yoshida, who explained in 2022 that Final Fantasy 16 didn't feature turn-based combat because younger audiences weren't so familiar with older RPGs. Yoshida said at the time, quote, I'm from a generation that grew up with command and turn-based RPGs. I think I understand how interesting and immersive it can be. On the other hand, for the past decade or so, I've seen quite a number of opinions saying, I don't understand the attraction of selecting commands in video games. This opinion is only increasing, particularly with a younger audience who do not typically play RPGs, unquote. And I found that really fascinating, because to those of us who are older that maybe, you know, really cut our teeth on, you know, the turn-based RPGs of the past, either being computer RPGs like Wizardry or Ultima or anything like that, versus or like the Nintendo and Super Nintendo era of like your Final Fantasies and your Dragon Quests and Phantasy Stars and, you know, games like that that were turn-based battles, we're used to it because that's what we grew up with. But if you grew up playing Fortnite and Roblox, you're not going to have the same kind of thinking that translates to a turn-based RPG. Now, I will say Atlus, I believe, has done a great job keeping the genre alive, because Persona has really caught on with audiences, especially younger audiences. And so they've really gotten, so it's really kind of helped reintroduce the genre to people. And then Metaphor ReFantazio, I've been playing recently. That one is still also turn-based, and I think there's like Expedition 33 is coming out. So we're starting to see turn-based RPGs come back in a AAA concept, not just the HD 2D remakes like Octopath Traveler. But it is something that I've seen and we've talked about, where if you're raised playing Roblox and Minecraft, that is where all of your gaming knowledge comes from. So if you try to go to something that we played as kids, you will see that it's not as intuitive. Like, if a kid is, you know, getting to be, you know, like just before pre-teenage or early teenager age, and all they've played is Roblox and Minecraft, and you give them a Nintendo controller and tell them to play Super Mario Brothers, they're not really going to know what to do, because that's not the type of game they were raised playing. Whereas us, who are older, we were raised playing side-scrolling platformers. So we obviously get all the mechanics, but a lot of people don't. A lot of kids don't. And so what Horii wants you to do is to have Dragon Quest introduce the younger generation to turn-based RPGs, so maybe they can make more turn-based RPGs for them, because as we get older, those of us who grew up playing turn-based RPGs, as we get older, there's going to, unfortunately, and this is the circle of life, there's going to be less and less of us. So they want to get the younger generation into turn-based RPGs so the genre will live on. The Breakman says, Dragon Warrior 3 was the first RPG I ever played. I have loved RPGs since. And Questbuster says, between indies and efforts like what is happening with Dragon Quest, there's an RPG for everyone nowadays, which is awesome. The Breakman says, there wasn't much variety in gameplay back in those days. Most games were action games. We didn't have 3D or VR. We didn't have these newfangled polygon things. Well, also, like, the reason that computer RPGs and turn-based RPGs got popular in the first place, and I'm kind of separating video games from computer games a little bit, because computer games, I'm thinking like on the Atari and on you know, PCs and stuff. So this is your Wizardry and your Ultimas and games like that. It's because you couldn't do fast action on some of those computers, especially on the IBM PC. You couldn't do lots of fast action. So that's why in the late 80s, it was filled with these turn-based RPGs or point-and-click adventure games from Sierra, from Lucasfilm Games. And so there weren't action games, so this is what they had instead. And, like, Wizardry was made here and then got huge in Japan. And that Wizardry really started the turn-based RPG revolution of JRPGs. And we actually did recently talk about the passing of Andrew C. Greenberg, who was the head of Wizardry, who created Wizardry, or I think co-created it. I had all the stuff before, and I'm doing it from memory. I think I even still has. Yeah, I even still have the picture here from when I talked about it. But Wizardry was a computer RPG because of the limitations of a computer compared to something like an Atari 2600 at the time or an NES at the time. That's why I kind of delineate those, but it's all because we couldn't do action. And then once we could do action, that's when you started seeing the point-and-click adventure go away. That's when you started seeing a lot of the turn-based RPGs kind of go away, when we could start doing the same things with action. And then as more and more young people really wanted action, they started making things more action-oriented because they were evolving with the times. S. Jared Matt says, thankfully, tactics RPGs are still thriving. And the Breakman says, PC games were way ahead of consoles. And I would actually, in terms of action, not really. Not in the late 80s, early 90s. Like, if you wanted fast action, you needed to go to a Super Nintendo or a Sega Genesis. You didn't get really the fast action from too many PC games until John Carmack figured out how to get fast action out of a PC game. But it took a lot of work to get the PC to get up to what dedicated chips on a console could be. Questbuster says, generations ago in the 80s, when computer RPGs were making commercial waves outside of mainframes, they worked with a demographic that grew up around being tech savvy, and where tabletop RPGs with a lot of manual crunch like D&D were big. Yeah, because like wargaming was a big thing as well on board games. That's actually one of the things I found. I don't know if I ever mentioned it here. So going through the estate of my parents, and I actually found hordes, like envelopes on envelopes on envelopes on envelopes of these tabletop war games. My dad was a part of like a war game of the month club, where they would basically send him every month, they would send him a new war game based on either an actual battle in the past, or sometimes fictional battles. There were some that were about, you know, sci-fi in the future. There were some, he had some Lord of the Rings stuff that was based on Lord of the Rings, but a lot of it was like, it was this specific battle in World War II, and it was all hex stuff, and it had like the whole big sheet of how you did all the math, and you basically played out the battle, and it was a different battle every single month. And he had like several months worth of a subscription to this. So we had, and very few of them were actually ever played, but it was kind of fascinating to go through it. And that was a big community back in the time, and back in the 70s. This is when it was the 1970s. So yeah, it's hardcore old school. And that's what my dad was into. So I'm like, Why didn't he play? And he actually did have a D&D thing. He did have one thing that was like kind of a primer to D&D. This would have been back because TSR was one of the people that did some of this stuff. And I think he had like a primer of D&D through the wargaming stuff, but he was really into the wargaming thing. And so that type of stuff, when it went to computer, that was the stuff he was really into. I know, like, you know, some of the games that he did play on the computer were like Seven Cities of Gold and things like that. So those were the games that he was really into. And I kept all of them. So, you know, I know Breakman says I gave away all my old stuff. Not that I had a lot. There was a lot that I did get rid of from my parents' estate, but none of those war games. I have all of those old envelopes. I even like figured out what month they were and put them on the envelope, and they're in order and everything. All those old games. So, yeah. We are going to take a very quick music break, and then, honestly, here's the thing. Orange Lounge Radio is not happening tonight, so if anybody wants to bring up a topic or you want to call in, go into our Discord server, vognetwork.com/Discord, join the Green Room voice chat channel during the music break, and then we can chat about whatever you want to talk about in the gaming industry here in this wonderful December. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/vognetwork.
This is Christopher Tin, composer of Baba Yetu, and you're listening to the Bobby Black Wolf Show.
Speaking of games that didn't have that much action, Civilization, Christopher Tin, Grammy Award winner. We actually had him on the show right after he won the Grammy. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to be a Grammy Award-winning musician. All you got to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice or a video with just your voice, and I will choose which DMCA violation I will risk behind it, saying that you're coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. Now, I will say, during the break, or right before the break, because I was kind of transitioning into the break at the time, HDI Andrew brought up Dani Bunton. Now, she was an amazing game designer, especially back in, made a lot of waves in the 80s. And I know she had a career after that as well. But really, some of the innovations in multiplayer in computer games, you know, working within the strengths of the computers that we had, Dani Bunton did a lot of great things. Seven Cities was from Dani Bunton, but also Mule, which, believe it or not, here's where I'm going to get a lot of boos. I never played and never really understood. I was a little bit too young to get Mule at the time when it was really, really popular. So it really didn't click with me. Now, Dani Bunton's Modem Wars, that game of hers, I did play on Commodore 64 and even played, because I had a modem and a friend of mine had a modem. And so it was, you know, you would call the phone number and take over the phone line. And we played Modem Wars, which was basically, it was tanks. It was tanks on a battlefield. And, you know, everything would be done in clicks. And I remember, like, I lost, but I still saved the replay. And so all you could do was watch the replay if you didn't play anybody else on modems. But, no, Dani Bunton did a lot of great things for multiplayer. And HDI Andrew says, you need to play Mule multiplayer. Mule was a fun couple times single player, but multiplayer, it was a trip. And I do remember, like, I've watched some things recently more about Mule because, like I said, it was... it's not before my time because I was around. I was a kid at the time. It's just I didn't grasp at the time a lot more complex things in terms of computer games. So, like, I never played Ultima when it was popular because it was a little bit too advanced for me at the time. And then by the time I got to the point where I would have understood it, I was playing current stuff and not going back and playing the original Ultima or the original Wizardry or anything like that. And Mule kind of fell into that. But I did play Modem Wars a little bit after. So that was my experience with Dani Bunton. And HDI Andrew says about Mule, the careful balance of when you work together and when you screwed each other over. And yes, I have heard about it because it's I think it's like... Mule is about, like, you're trying to colonize a new area, and it's like there's a bunch of you trying to do it. It's one of those things, like, I haven't thought of it in a while. I just remember it Yeah, you're landing on a planet, and it's a game. It's about supply and demand economics. Maybe we need to teach this one in schools. Supply and demand economics. So around the same time as Oregon Trail, around that time. So yeah, no, it was originally released in 1983 on the Commodore 64, which is probably the version I've seen is the Commodore 64 version. It did get an NES port in 1990. And H.J. Andrew says the main way to make money is to go into collusion, just like the real world. Yeah, so it's actually very interesting. You should probably go read up it now. And it's stylized MULE as kind of an acronym, and I think it is like supposed to be an acronym of something, but I just don't remember what it is right now. But it's that. And H.J. Andrew says you wanted to work together, but at some point you had to backstab. So. You know, some of the social deduction games of today that we play on tabletop. Some of that was in here as well. S. Jared Matt says, yeah, I couldn't grasp RPGs on NES as a kid. I would rent them from our video store and not know what to do. And I was probably the same way, because I do remember I rented Final Fantasy because it had the big spread in Nintendo Power. And I didn't get it then. Now, when Final Fantasy 3 or 6, but here, you know, dumb American kid, Final Fantasy 3 came out. And Earthbound came out, that's when I really understood and got into the turn-based RPGs, and unfortunately never really went back to the earlier Final Fantasies until, actually, to be fair, the Pixel Remasters. And I've beaten 1, 2, and 3 in the Pixel Remasters, going back to there. Questbuster says, Orthanc on mainframes in 1975 had multiplayer, but not in the extent that Mule did. It was a dungeon crawler, but you could run into other players who have may been on the system, and if they wanted, they could grief you by treating you as a monster. Ouch. That actually reminds me of old BBS door games, because in BBS door games, it was asynchronous multiplayer. So BBS is, that's what we called into with modems before the internet. And so if you called into it, nobody else could be on at that time unless there were two nodes. So two different phone numbers someone could call in, or if the sysop was there, he was on the computer. He or she was on the computer. But they would have these door games like Trade Wars 2002. And some others like Legend of the Red Dragon, where you would go around and you would do your things. And then when your daily turns were done, you know, kind of like how we have like at mobile games today that limit your turns. When your turns were done, because they need to get you off the BBS so somebody else could call in, that's where your ship would be. And somebody else playing would be able to come in. And if they wanted to, they could attack your ship. Or they could, you know, do things like that. And so it was asynchronous multiplayer is what we play, what I played a lot in like the 80s and the 90s, really. So that sounds a little bit like Orthanc, I hope I'm pronouncing it right. But Questbuster, so I'm at that. It's like in on the mainframes, it would just store your location, and you would just, then other people could see you as they went by. S. Jeremy Matt says, I wanted to say I rented Dragon Warrior on NES, which is Dragon Quest, as a kid, and just passed off of the cover alone and ended up giving up right away. I'm so glad the original Dragon Warrior wasn't the first RPG I played. Says the Breakman, I wouldn't have fallen in love. Yeah, no, my first one that I really fell in love with was Earthbound. I had played a little bit of Final Fantasy III, but Earthbound was the one that really solidified it for me, and then I kind of went back to Final Fantasy III. Now, have I finished Final Fantasy III/6? No. I haven't. Hadn't gotten to it in their Pixel Remasters either. But we're all sitting here talking because we are older, the part of the older generation, talking about playing those as kids, and the entire point of the story that I was talking about was saying that kids today that were our age when we rented Dragon Warrior on the NES or played Dragon Warrior 3 for the first time and fell in love or played Earthbound, they're not playing games like that. They're playing your Fortnites and your Robloxes, or, you know, maybe they're, you know, maybe they're graduating up to Undertale. I think Undertale's kind of past, like, that's the previous generation. Kind of, or like the previous half generation or whatever, because Undertale is a turn-based RPG, and a lot of people have been gravitating to that for a little bit, but not a lot of people are playing those type of games. That's why they're trying to make things more action-oriented, because that's what the younger generation wants right now. And And that's what the creator of Dragon Quest says. Let your kids play Dragon Quest 3 HD 2D Remake when you're done with it. And maybe they'll start to love turn-based RPGs, and we can get back to making AAA turn-based RPGs here at Square. The Breakman says, I've played through those old RPGs so many times, so many hours wasted beating up slimes and flying airships. Was it really wasted? Was it really? Were you really wasting time? I would say, Breakman, you're not wasting your time. You were enriching your life with Dragon Warrior and Dragon Quest. On that note, that is going to be the end of the show. That is all that we're going to do this week. So I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over here at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. So catch us live and interact with us directly. Orange Lounge Radio is not going on tonight. Unfortunately, two of the three members are currently under the weather, and so they should not be talking on the internet, and they're not going to be talking on the internet tonight. So, and they are also not going to be here next week because of previously arranged things that are happening next weekend. They're not going to be here next weekend. So they will be back on December 22nd, that Sunday night. I will not be here the night of December 22nd, though. So it's going to be just them. They are not going to have their opening act. I'm not going to get to talk to for a month here on the air. So the best to Rob and Jamie. I hope they get well soon. But we will still be here next Sunday night to talk about complain about who won the Game Awards, because we're not going to be live streaming the Game Awards. I've got, unfortunately, other things going on, especially the fact that I've got painters in the house all week. So I'm not going to be able to stream because the contractors are going to need me. I need to be available for them, so I can't lock myself in here for the 3 hours, however long the Game Awards are. We're not going to be live streaming the Game Awards, but I'm sure that we're going to be very upset at somebody who won. And there will be some interesting trailers and things that we'll probably talk about from the Game Awards. So we'll be back next Sunday night here, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can still talk live on the VOG Discord, vognetwork.com/Discord, or here on Sunday night. You can also find more things on Blue Sky. BobbyBlackWolf.com is my name over there at Blue Sky. You can even see a preview of what we're going to be talking about. I actually post a screenshot, so you get a little bit of a taste of what the Twitch stream looks like over on Blue Sky if you follow me there. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but we would not be able to make all this work without the people who go above and beyond. You being here is really all we ask, but people who go above and beyond here on Twitch do help us keep the lights on. Thank you so much, Dark Tetsuya, who resubscribed, saying almost 4 years subbed plus a 32-month streak, brought you by Weird Twitch Math. Yes, we don't understand how Twitch math happens, but it happens. So thank you so much for that. And also, we did get a follow from El Gordo de Buenos Aires. So hopefully that was not a curse word. I think Deft would have told me if it was. I don't know that much Spanish, but thank you so much for being here. Gracias for being here. Indiana Jones comes out tomorrow. Questbuster reminds everybody, the new Indiana Jones game, which I believe has been reviewing pretty well. Okay, so it's the fat man of Buenos Aires. Well, I can relate. I'm not from Buenos Aires, but I can relate to being the anyway. I'm gonna hit the button before I say anything else, so I don't say anything. So anyway, enjoy if you're playing Indiana Jones. Enjoy it. Try to enjoy the Game Awards. Look for the good stuff. Have a great week. I'll see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.